invest with confidence.
Good morning. Welcome to Radioactivity. I'm Rob Lori. Coming up, we're going to talk with Jeff Weaver, who was Bernie Sanders' presidential campaign manager in 2016. He'll be coming to the Tampa area next week. More about that in a moment. First, one listener comment about yesterday's program. As we were talking about the outcome of Tuesday's elections, I mentioned that President Trump had criticized the Florida Democratic nominee for governor, Andrew Gillum, as a failed socialist mayor. Here's what one listener had to say after yesterday's program.
My name's Scott, and concerning the program, if Republicans want to make this a referendum on socialism, I think us that canvass for Andrew Gillum should welcome that conversation by canvassing and talking to independents and maybe even Republicans that are willing to converse with us on socialism. And we can talk about issues like Social Security, Medicare, public parks, fire, and other socialistic elements of our society, public libraries, that people take for granted and don't really think about critically. So I think this is a great opportunity for canvassers, for Willie Andrew Gillum, to have this conversation.
Well, there you have a listener comment from yesterday's program. Our guest is Jeff Weaver, a longtime political aide to Bernie Sanders. He was his presidential campaign manager 2 years ago. Weaver's written a new book called How Bernie Won: Inside the Revolution That's Taking Back Our Country and Where We Go From Here. And Jeff Weaver will be speaking three times next week in St. Petersburg and Sarasota. Jeff, welcome to WMNF. Good to have you here.
Hey, I'm happy to be here. Very exciting times in Florida.
Really, very interesting times. So let's talk about this idea of socialism. The president tweeted yesterday that Andrew Gillum, who is the Democratic standard bearer for governor here in Florida in the November election, is a failed socialist mayor. That term socialist has come up again and again. Jeff, is being called socialist the kiss of death in a statewide election or a national election?
I don't think so. Bernie Sanders won 23 contests in the presidential nominating process. He's been elected to the Congress and to the Senate from Vermont, a place that people perceive as very liberal, but in fact has a long Republican tradition. And what people are focused really on are the issues that affect their lives. And what does it mean to be a progressive, or, some people classify themselves as democratic socialists or to be a progressive. But what it means is that you want a government and an economy that works for people, that you want to make sure people get the health care they need for themselves and their children without either bankrupting themselves or making choices between food and medicine. It means that students are able to go to college and contribute to our economy regardless of what zip code they come from or how much money their parents have. It means making sure that people make a decent standard of living, a living wage. Most people now are focused on a $15 minimum wage, which would give a raise to 40% of Americans who work. These are the kinds of, making sure that opportunities are available to people in every community. As you know, there are many communities where opportunity has been denied people for a long time. And we find those, frankly, in minority communities, but there are also many poor white communities, and we need to make sure that everybody has an opportunity in this country to succeed, to contribute to our economy and to our nation, that we are a welcoming and inclusive country, and that the big money interests and the wealthy and the powerful no longer control the economic and political life of our country. So if that's what folks are being accused of, I think that's a pretty good platform to run on.
Well, let's go back in history. I mean, are there people who've been, let's say, in the presidency in the U.S. that would either match that term progressive or democratic socialist? Would you point to anybody in the last 100 years or so that would link up with the kind of things that you're talking about?
Well, certainly if you look at, I discuss this a lot in the book, the sort of history of the modern Democratic Party. Franklin Roosevelt, who was vilified certainly by Republicans, but frankly by many inside the Democratic Party. And we hear a lot about, conflict in the Democratic Party these days between the sort of more conservative elements and between the progressive wing. But, those conflicts pale in comparison to the fights that FDR had to endure when he was running for president and when he was president, fights within his own party. But you look at, if you look at what came out of that, Social Security, came out of that. A tremendous number of protections for workers. And it's importantly, and this is, in the book, in his 1944 State of the Union Address, which I include in its entirety of my book, and you don't need to read my book to get it. You can go online and find it. This is, he laid out the sort of unfinished business of the Democratic Party, the modern Democratic Party. And it talks about a host of economic advances that had eluded him in his presidency. Obviously, he had presided during a war for the survival of Western democracy. But he talked about health care for all, about making sure that people have decent wages, that people have housing, that people are protected from the vagaries of unemployment and other kinds of things that are outside their control, make sure farmers get paid a fair price. And ominously, he warned that if you don't do that, if the Democratic Party does not lead that fight, that it opens the door for authoritarian and neo-fascist elements in this country. And in fact, the Democratic Party did get off track in the 90s, lost faith with working people who had been its foundation, broke faith with communities of color and other marginalized communities. And, we've seen the repercussions of that. I think Barack Obama did a lot to rebuild that. But there's a lot more work to be done, and it is the responsibility of every generation of people to build on the successes of the people who have gone before them. And, in the Democratic Party, we had, Roosevelt was able to do some things, that Johnson, who was, I would not describe as a progressive, but certainly, we had Medicare, we had Civil Rights Act, and a host of other protections and economic improvements for people in this country. And, we've seen now Trump is trying to basically undo decades of success. Leaders who certainly identified with the kind of brand of politics that I identify with, Martin Luther King Jr., who's a great civil rights leader, obviously, but also spoke much more broadly about the plight of poor people and working people of all races, who talked about militarism and other dangerous developments in the country. So we have a long history of outspoken and revered people in this country who have articulated a vision that is very similar and analogous to the vision that Bernie Sanders has articulated, that Andrew Gillum is articulating in Florida, that candidates, frankly, are articulating all across the country.
Our guest is Jeff Weaver. He's a longtime political aide to Bernie Sanders. He was his presidential campaign manager in 2016. He'll be speaking at the Suncoast Tiger Bay next Thursday in the afternoon, and also Eckerd College that night, next Thursday night, and Friday at Fogartyville in Sarasota. And this is WMNF 88.5 FM. I remember looking back at Michael Harrington, who was the actual founder of Democratic Socialists of America. His books on poverty, at least one of his books on poverty, was being read by John F. Kennedy. Kennedy was a fan of his writing. And when you mention LBJ, you say he wasn't a progressive, but he instituted single payer for senior citizens. Single payer, which is Bernie Sanders' goal.
Absolutely. And, Medicare has saved the lives of, I'm sure, millions of people in this country. And, obviously we need to shore up Medicare, not only in terms of its long-term health, but also in terms of making sure that the benefit package actually covers all of the needs that, seniors have in this country. And we moved somewhat ahead with a, prescription drug benefit, which is inadequate, but that has a lot to do with the fact that in enacting it, we were not aggressive enough in dealing with the greed and excesses of the pharmaceutical industry, which charges Americans the highest prices in the world for prescription drugs. I mean, I remember a very trip early on with Bernie Sanders when he was actually a congressman in Vermont. We took a bus trip to Montreal, Quebec, which is only 60 miles from where I grew up in northern Vermont, with a number of women who were suffering from breast cancer. And they were able to buy the identical medicine in the identical packaging produced in the same factory with the same level of governmental oversight in Canada for literally one-tenth the price that they were paying in the United States. I have a son who has type 1 diabetes, and the amount of money that is charged to people with diabetes for testing strips and insulin other things that they need to survive, grossly overpriced. And people who don't have insurance, you know, I've met so many people, and the senator certainly has in his travels, but so many people where you have parents who are making the choice between medicines that they need to survive and that their kids need to survive. But that's, you know, no other Western democracy does it that way. And, you know, we have worse health outcomes than they do. We pay twice as much per capita in this country for healthcare as people do in other Western democracies who have better health outcomes. You know, there's a lot of scary talk from Republicans, but, you know, as actually to quote a Republican congressman who actually worked with Senator Sanders on trying to deal with the excesses of drug pricing in this country, show me the dead Canadians, right? You know, they have a system that costs half as much per person in their country as ours does. They have better health outcomes because they don't let insurance companies and drug companies rip their people off.
But how do you convince, you know, how do you convince that, I'll just say it, how do you convince that white truck driver or that white plumber or that, you know, that white, any, you know, blue collar guy who's 57 years old, he hears the word socialism and he says, nah, I don't want that here in the U.S. It's a foreign concept, and you know, it's Venezuela. That's what socialism is. How do you speak as somebody who's worked on the Bernie Sanders campaign? How do you speak to those people?
No, I hear you. Look, there's a lot of name calling in politics these days, and you know, 2 second sound bites. But what you have to do is you have to talk to people about the real experiences in their lives. I mean, you talk about, you know, truck drivers or plumbers and other self-employed people, they know better than anybody how the healthcare system is broken, the amount of money that they're paying, the difficulty in accessing care. You may have insurance, but a bunch of doctors don't take it, or it doesn't cover this, it doesn't cover that. You may have enormous co-pays and deductibles still. That's not to say that we haven't come a tremendous way, you know, with the Affordable Care Act and expanding insurance. But again, this is the legacy of the Democratic Party when it has been most successful in this country, is that we build on the successes of the people who have come before us. And that's not a repudiation of what was done before, but really an affirmation of what they have done in terms of bringing us to a new point where we can go either even further than what they were able to accomplish in their time. So, you know, I find when you go around the country, and I traveled a lot with Bernie in 2016, and, you know, in the Democratic primary, he essentially won rural Democrats, and he won so-called moderate Democrats, and he did extremely well with independent voters. And he was winning you have closed primaries in Florida, which is anomalous in this country. Most places do not have closed primaries. Independents in the vast majority of places are allowed to participate in the Democratic primary process. And we saw in those cases that he was winning, you know, 75 or 80% of Democrats in those races. So this message actually has broad appeal, and the truth of the matter is that this, you know, sort of quote-unquote progressive movement that you see today, you know, a lot of it has roots in the progressive movement that took place in the Midwest of this country. You know, the Midwest of this country and the Plain States used to be the hotbed of progressivism. Now, Republicans have taken over in those places for a lot of reasons. So this is not something that's alien to America, but is very much in the mainstream of American political thought. We forget that sometimes because, you know, we have lived through far-right Republicanism, a party that has, you know, always represented the rich and the powerful, but has, you know, with the latest administration, dropped any pretense that it cares about working people. And we have got to reclaim, you know, the FDR mantle. You know, following the New Deal politics of FDR, the Democratic Party was the dominant party in this country for decades with brief interruptions. And we've got to get back to our roots. We've got to create a multiracial movement in this country that says we're going to look after the 99% because the 1% have been looking after themselves quite well for long enough.
Well, Jeff Weaver is with us. He is was the 2016 campaign manager for Vermont Senator Bernie Sanders when Bernie Sanders was running for president. And you're listening to 88.5 FM. This is WMNF in Tampa. Jeff's going to be speaking in the St. Petersburg, Sarasota area next week. We'll tell you more about that in a little bit. If you've got a question for Jeff, you can email us in the studio here, dj@wmnf.org, or you can call us up at 813 813- 239-9663. So, Jeff, you talk about this in the book. I mentioned white older guys. White younger guys were sometimes called Bernie bros, and the slant on that sometimes in the mainstream media was Bernie bros were these white 20- and 30-year-old guys who were kind of hostile to Hillary Clinton, hostile to feminism, hostile to people of color, and that they dominated Bernie's campaign. Now you've got Andrew Gillum, who got the endorsement of Bernie Sanders, winning statewide here in Florida, the first potential African-American governor in the state. Talk about this Bernie bro. Talk about the Bernie bro myth.
Myth, we call it.
Go ahead.
And, you know, it has been, look, you know, political campaigns are hotly contested, and people, you know, attempt to create negative narratives against their opponents for their political benefit, which I get. I'm in the political business. I know how that works. But the truth of the matter is, and there's been a tremendous amount of research both during the presidential campaign season in 2016, 2015, and since, you know, it clearly demonstrates that Bernie Sanders was supported by young people of both men and women, one men and women among young people, one young people of all races, frankly. Was winning, you know, it took him longer to take hold. I mean, that's empirically true among the African-American community, but was winning African-Americans under 40 by the end of the campaign process. Harvard-Harris polling done this past spring showed he's more popular among African-Americans than any other racial group. And what you're seeing is the full diversity of our movement. You mentioned Andrew Gillum, Stacey Abrams in Georgia, who is the Democratic nominee for Georgia governor, progressive African-American woman, Ben Jealous, who is a leading surrogate for our campaign, a former head of the NAACP, Democratic nominee for governor in Maryland. Everybody's heard of Alexandria Ocasio-Cortez, young Latina. So, you know, this movement, our movement, knows no boundaries. It doesn't know racial boundaries. It doesn't know geographic boundaries. It doesn't know gender boundaries. It doesn't know gender orientation boundaries. It's not bound by country of origin. This is an inclusive movement that represents the needs and aspirations of working people. And, you know, as I say in the book, the recipe for success of the Democratic Party is to articulate, you know, when you do polling of people, it is incredible the commonality of the aspirations of the American people, regardless of where they come from. People want economic security for themselves and their family. They want to live in social dignity. They want to be, in some areas of their life, they want to be left alone, frankly, in their personal lives. They don't want the government meddling in it. You know, they want to be able to know that their kids are going to get a good education, that their aging parents are going to be taken care of, that they're not going to get sick and bankrupted or die for lack of medicine. So we have got to articulate a message which addresses the commonality of that. But at the same time, we do have to acknowledge that different communities face different barriers in achieving those common aspirations. You know, in some communities, people face the specter of police violence. In other communities, they do not. In some places have been deindustrialized. Some other places have not. Some places have real problems with their school system in terms of the resources they have available to them. Some do not. And I think if we can articulate a common vision of where we want every American to be, but at the same time acknowledge that different parts of our great country have faced and still face different barriers, and that in addressing those different barriers in different places, we are helping everybody achieve the set of common aspirations. I think that will go a long way to breaking down the animosity that Republicans try to create in order to stay in power, which is pitting people against one another in this country. That's a favorite tactic of theirs, taken to a fine art form by President Trump, and now apparently by the Republican nominee for governor in Florida. You know, some of his first comments out of the gate, you know, a racial dog whistle, I think, is an understatement of what we heard from him yesterday, and his refusal to either clarify himself or apologize for the remark, I think, is very telling about the type of not only candidate that he is, but the type of administration that he would run in Florida. And I got to tell you, you know, there's been a lot of people are very attuned these days to this type of thing. And the state that is so dependent on tourism as an economic driver should really be concerned about the prospect that they would elect a governor who would turn off so many people in that way.
All right, I want to play that soundbite in just a moment. Jeff Weaver is our guest. He was Bernie Sanders' campaign manager in 2016. He wrote a new book called How Bernie Won Inside the Revolution That's Taking Back Our Country and Where We Go From Here. He'll be speaking at Suncoast Tiger Bay next Thursday at noon, and he'll also be speaking at Eckerd College next Thursday at 7 p.m., and next Friday he'll be at Fogartyville in Sarasota. Do you think that Bernie Sanders would have won the 2016 primary had the superdelegate system not been in place?
Well, it was more than just the superdelegate system, but your basic question is, would Bernie have won in the general election against Trump? I think the consensus opinion is certainly he would have. Certainly, I believe he would have for a couple of reasons. And one of Trump's pollsters on television a few months ago said that if Bernie had been the nominee, he would have beaten Trump. One of the reasons was that Bernie Sanders had an appeal, certainly had a strong support among Democrats. But he also had, as I described, this appeal among independent voters. And in almost every place in the country, the Democratic Party and the Republican Party, frankly, neither one has a majority of support. And so they rely on independent voters, to create a coalition in a general election to win. And that will certainly be the case in the elections coming up in November in Florida. And his appeal, his demonstrated appeal in the primary process among but those voters was quite strong. In addition to that, he really motivated young people to come out and vote. He, in the primary process, got more votes among millennials than either Secretary Clinton or Donald Trump combined. And his ability to motivate young people to come out to vote, who often don't come out to vote, also made him a very formidable general election candidate.
Boy, and there's some research that shows that Tuesday, the reason Gillum won here in Florida is because of young people and because of African-American voters. Two groups coalesced and got behind Gillum in a big way. Let me just play a little bit of what Ron DeSantis, Andrew Gillum's opponent, said yesterday on Fox News. And this has stirred up a huge controversy. And I want to talk about the emergence, perhaps the mainstreaming of racism in our country.
Sure.
But here's Ron DeSantis, who is the Republican nominee for governor.
Well, look, I mean, this is Florida elections are always competitive. And, this is a guy who, although he's much too liberal for Florida, I think he's got huge problems with how he's governed Tallahassee. He is an articulate spokesman for those far left views, and he's a charismatic candidate. And, I watched those Democrat debates. None of that was my cup of tea. But, I mean, he performed better than the other people there. So we've got to work hard to make sure that we continue Florida going in a good direction. Let's build off the success we've had on Governor Scott. The last thing we need to do is to monkey this up by trying to embrace a socialist agenda with huge tax increases and bankrupting the state. That is not going to work. That's not going to be good for Florida.
All right. So that was Ron DeSantis yesterday. What did you think of that, Jeff?
Well, look, it is so obviously this guy is a Harvard educated lawyer, I believe. So he's been trained in the use of words and how you use words to persuade people. And monkey up is not an expression that anybody uses, right? I mean, people say monkey around, and so on and so forth, but no one says monkey up. But that is so clearly a call out to people who, are racist, to rally around him in this election. It is really shameful, but this is what Trump has done for this country. Trump has made it permissible, to engage in that kind of public discourse, which is so deeply destructive in terms of building the type of multiracial coalition that I described of working people and middle-income people and poor people that we have got to do. Every time people respond to that, the people at the top of all the money lap all the way to the bank, because as long as people are divided at the bottom, they can continue to push an agenda like the Trump tax bill that essentially loots the treasury at the expense of local communities. They're laughing all the way to the bank. So we have got to stand together, white people, black people, brown people. We have got to stand together and unabashedly say that this type of overt racism in this country will no longer be tolerated. And that starts with defeating DeSantis in November. We have got to send a message to him and every other racist who wants to run for office that's not going to be tolerated in this country. Even, I know many conservative people. In fact, I remember a Halloween recently where I was there with a bunch of parents who all our kids were trick-or-treating together. Everybody on my deck was a Republican except for me. But you know what? None of them, none of them would be interested in supporting a candidate who would use that kind of really disgusting rhetoric.
Do you think that racism and the attacks on immigrants, are the ways to divide the working class in the country, to divide that old FDR coalition?
Oh, 100%. You know, it's not a new tactic. You know, it's been going on in this country for centuries, right? The pitting of working class people of different races against one another in order to maintain power in the country. That's been going. That's an old game. It's just being done in a very new and a despicable way. And I said this on a show earlier today. You know, our allies in Western Europe confronted in many ways what we are beginning to confront in this country at the beginning of the 20th century. With, you know, they ultimately prevailed over it with calamitous cost. And you know, when you watch video of members of the greatest generation in America who went to Europe and went into the Pacific to protect the democracy for all of us, you know, and many of whom lost their lives. And to see that transplanted here in many ways, that sort of authoritarian tendency, the use of a racial division to divvy people up, you know, to the extreme that we saw under this administration, where you had toddlers and almost infants torn from their mother's arms from people who had committed what is a misdemeanor under the law. I mean, it is that type of inhumanity being imported into America. And this is exactly what FDR warned about in his 1944 State of the Union address. People should really read it if they want to understand the unfinished business of the Democratic Party and his very prescient predictions about what would happen if we as Democrats lost our way. And, you know, thankfully we have people like Andrew Gillum and others who are prepared to get us back on track, who are prepared to rebuild that FDR coalition, but in a way that ensures that all the parts of it are equal and fair partners. But that's the direction we have got to go in. And if we don't do that, you know, our country is going to increasingly be taken over by the Trumps, the DeSantoses, and frankly, over time, worse.
Jeff Weaver is our guest. He ran Bernie Sanders' presidential campaign in 2016, and you're listening to WMNF in Tampa, 88.5 FM. Do you think that Bernie should run again in 2020?
Well, my personal, you know, he has publicly said that he is contemplating it and hasn't made a decision, and that is the truth. My personal view, if, I don't want to ruin the end of the book for people, but the last three words of the book are "Run, Bernie, run." Because I do think that he is uniquely positioned in this moment to help rebuild that coalition, to bring back this FDR, the FDR coalition we were discussing, to bring independence back as part of a broad-based movement that puts the needs of middle-income and working people and poor people and marginalized communities ahead of the interests of the wealthy and the powerful.
All right, so I owe this. We're getting a bunch of emails, and almost every phone line is lit. David writes this, easy there regarding white people. He says, I'm a 59-year-old white plumber who voted for Sanders and then for Andrew Gillum. Ha ha. So I apologize, David. Stereotypes are always wrong, and I was wrong to stereotype every 59-year-old white plumber. 813-239-9663 is our phone number. Jeff, though, my friends who are Republicans say, look, unemployment's at a record low rate, they say. They say that black employment is higher than it's ever been in history. Wall Street is way, way up. So the economy is doing well. President Trump has had a huge number of successes. Why overturn the success of President Trump? What do you say back?
Well, there are two. There is the economy, the macro numbers in the economy, and then there is actually the reality of people's lives. There's a tremendous amount of research, and there was recently even more in the last few days, that's showing while the economy is quote-unquote doing well, families are not doing well. Wages are stagnant in this country. That is an anomalous situation. Generally, when unemployment goes down, there's pressure on wages to go up. That has not happened in this country. You know, there's a refusal by the Republicans, and certainly by Trump, who at one point actually said the minimum wage should be lower, to raise the minimum wage to a living wage. You know, a $15 minimum wage would give 40% of people a raise in this country. And you know, I hear people say, well, it's going to put people out of business. Some folks know this. I actually have a small business. I run a comic book gaming store in Northern Virginia. I have 7 employees. And I would tell you, I would love a $15 minimum wage, because that would mean all the people who come into my store have additional money to spend, because I have 7 employees, but I have hundreds of customers. And believe me, it would, for people who have small micro businesses, it would be a huge boon, a higher minimum wage. So, you know, people are going bankrupt by healthcare bills. People can't afford to send their kids to college. People have aging parents increasingly, and that's a very expensive prospect, right? So while the quote-unquote economy is doing well and the fat cats on Wall Street are making big bucks, there's no doubt about that, corporate profits are way up, and they're up in part because of this massive tax giveaway that Trump passed. But working people in this country are struggling. A lot of people are working multiple jobs. I'm sure that's true in Florida as it is everywhere else. You know, people are working a job and a half or 2 jobs. Families that would want to have one person at home can't afford to do that. So we have got to look. It's not about macro numbers. It's not about a bunch of wonky economists talking about what's good or bad. Question is, how are real people faring in this economy? And I would say that that's not well.
Gina writes this, and this is a really important question. Do you think the changes by the Democratic National Committee with respect to the superdelegates last weekend have brought a meaningful change to the party? What are your thoughts?
100%. And I actually negotiated with the Clinton campaign before the convention in 2016 the framework under which these changes would be, you know, discussed and worked through. And you know, I have to say that the elimination of superdelegates on the first vote, I think, will restore a lot of people's confidence that the process is in fact fair, and that the rank and file of the party will be the people who choose the nominee and not party insiders. That's a major change that I think will help restore the faith of many people in the process itself. And there were a bunch of other, that was the most high profile reform, but there were other reforms both to the nominating process and to the functioning of the party itself, all of which are designed to make the process more open, transparent, and responsive to grassroots voters. So it is a major change in terms of democratizing the Democratic Party.
I want to let people know, too, in the next hour here on WMNF, some of the people who contributed to the Gillum win will be in the studio talking with Shelley Reback in the next hour, the Democratic Progressive Caucus of Tampa Bay, Indivisible Action Tampa Bay, and Organized Florida will all be in the studio talking about what happened on Tuesday. Well, Jeff Weaver is our guest. He was the campaign manager for Bernie Sanders in 2016. Let's go to Vivian, who's got a question from Tampa. Vivian, what's your question for Jeff?
Yes, good morning. I am a retiree. I get Social Security, and my wages haven't gone up. And I think that's very important, because part of the baby boomer generation, which there's a lot of us, are not getting any benefit from this supposedly great economy. And for, you know, the last thing that I have to say is that when they compare socialism, the democratic socialism, with Venezuela's socialism or communism, I tell them, well, you're with in cahoots with Russian. So, you know, I'm sorry. I know it sounds childish, but sometimes you got to go down to their level.
All right, Vivian, thanks a lot. Yeah, so 2 things there, Jeff. People on Social Security really have seen tiny increases in their pay or their Social Security checks over the last few years. And the Republican Party, I think, is bent on saying, if you're a Democratic Socialist, you want to institute something like Venezuela in the U.S. Could you tackle both those?
Yeah, well, okay. On the first one, you know, this is a major problem, and this is partly due, and actually Senator Sanders has had a bill for many years to try to address this. You know, the measure they use to decide whether Social Security retirees get a raise or not is tied to, you know, broad indicators of inflation in the country, rather than looking at the items that older Americans disproportionately buy. Older Americans disproportionately buy health care, right, housing, and items like that. And again, I'm not trying to stereotype, but, I mean, if you just look at consumer patterns, older Americans are more likely to buy a certain category of goods than other goods. So the fact that a particular electronic item goes down a lot in price because of some advancement doesn't necessarily affect the standard of living of somebody who's not buying that product. So we need to have a measure for judging whether Social Security retirees get a increase in their benefit based on the basket of goods that those particular Americans purchase on a regular basis. And if you did that, the Social Security raises that they get would be much more. We also have to raise the floor benefit under Social Security. It's very low right now. It's impossible to live on. Too many Americans are in the position where they have to rely almost solely on Social Security. That has to be at a minimum, a level that is possible to live on. So that's that answer. So we've got to protect and preserve Social Security, and we have to increase its benefits. So one of the ways you could fund that, people may know that when you make income, at some point you stop paying Social Security. I believe it's in the $108,000 range. So you pay Social Security tax up to that, and then after that, you don't pay any. So the effective Social Security tax rate for people making $1 million is 20% of what everybody else is paying. That's just wrong, and we need to make sure that people are paying Social Security tax on all of their income by lifting the cap. So that's one way of dealing with that particular problem.
Yeah, Venezuela. Yeah,
Venezuela. Look, Venezuela is a ridiculous example. Venezuela is a developing country that relied on one commodity, oil, which, you know, the price of which has gone down precipitously. Although people wouldn't know it at the gas tank, but you know, if you look over a 10-year period, 20-year period, is down. Their economy was obviously completely mismanaged. And you know, to compare the United States, I mean, why don't I pick like a tiny, like, progressive country in Europe, like Liechtenstein or something, and compare that to the United States? It's a similarly ludicrous comparison. And the truth of the matter is that these Republicans, these Trump people, the president, DeSantis, and these people, they don't have an answer to the substance of what people like Andrew Gillum are talking about in terms of making the lives of regular people better. And so they somehow think that injecting Venezuela is an out for them, because they don't want to talk about the substance of it. They don't want to talk about why we pay the highest prices in the world for prescription drugs. They don't want to talk about why our schools are underfunded. They don't want to talk about why our roads are crumbling. They don't want to talk about algae blooms in Florida. They don't want to talk about why wages aren't going up for people who are working very hard. So these are the issues they don't want to talk about. They want to talk about Venezuela. Well, our job is to talk about the issues that affect the lives of real people and to make those lives better.
Bernie Sanders, 2016 campaign manager, Jeff Weaver, is with us live here on WMNF in Tampa. He's going to be speaking at Suncoast Tiger Bay in St. Pete next Thursday. I think doors open at 11:30, and then he'll be speaking at Eckerd College next Thursday night at 7 o'clock, and he'll be speaking at Fogartyville in Sarasota at 7 o'clock next Friday night. Let's go to Tony in Tampa, who's been waiting for a while. Tony, what's your question for Jeff?
Well, I always marvel at how when people left of, let's say, Donald Trump, use the European and civilized nations and the standards that they live by. If they ever went and actually did a demographic study or a cultural study on those countries, nobody in the world is more diverse than the United States. Go look at Sweden, Germany, France, all that. You are going to see a couple of different colors from only a couple of few nations, India, maybe the Middle East, things like that.
So Tony, is your point that democratic socialism wouldn't work in the U.S. because we're so diverse? Is that your point?
Yes, and also our culture, not just diverse because of our culture, but the fact of the matter is, the spokesman on here is talking about how Republicans, I would be included in that group willingly. How they say that people need to do their own and do this and that and the other, or they were irresponsible for this and that's why they're in the position. The fact is, you look at Gillum, you look at your spokesman. These people are in the positions they're in because they either had parents that could afford college, or they were extremely good in school and they got a college scholarship, or they got a grant and they were steadfast enough to complete and to get themselves a degree, which I have never done. Didn't have the stick-to-itiveness to do it. That's my own problem. And they don't take part in just Social Security. They don't have so much faith in Social Security and whatever goals and objectives a Democrat or Republican president or administration or Congress would do to do it. They go and they invest it elsewhere, 401k, whatever investments they have, because they don't trust the government to give them what they need to do. Yet they sit and decry and I feel bad for people that made bad decisions. but there's a stack of them, and I'm one of them. But I am willing to say, hey, listen, boy, which I'm going to advise my children to do better. But that's it.
Yeah, okay. Well, Tony, I think we got it. I think we got your question. Thank you so much. Thanks for the question. All right, Jeff, what would you say back to Tony?
Well, look, what I would say to Tony, I, in terms of Andrew Gillum, obviously a man of humble beginnings who, you know, is a self-made man, certainly not somebody who was given handouts by his parents, that's for sure. Same for somebody like Bernie Sanders, frankly. But the truth of the matter is that it is overly difficult for people to get ahead in this country. That's no matter how hard you work. There are in Florida, I'm confident, as there is everywhere else in the country, people who are working very hard, who are playing by all the rules, and still cannot get ahead. That's a structural problem, right? That is a problem that where wages are too low, where you have a healthcare system which is irrational, where college is overly expensive. You know, what people forget, and, you know, sometimes we have short memories. It was not that long ago when in most states, public colleges and universities were actually almost free. That was the reality in the United States. That's not something that people are trying to import. That's something we're trying to return to. And if people don't want to go to college, that's fine. I don't have anything against people who do or don't want to go to college. But what I am saying is that in a global economy, when we are competing with countries all over the world, we have got to have an educated workforce. We want to be as productive as possible. We want people to be able to maximize their own personal success in this country. And that means that we cannot have a college degree that costs people $150,000 or $200,000 a year. That's creating, you know, an aristocracy in this country. And that's a problem. You know, I'm a big believer in America. I'm a big believer in the vision of America that you can, you know, rise up and make yourself as successful as you can make yourself. But at the same time, we have to acknowledge that there are increasingly structural impediments that keep people from all communities. And it is obviously worse than, as I mentioned, there are different barriers in different communities that we have to address that keep people from being successful. And what that means is you end up overall with a poorer country. You may have in the aggregate more wealth, but it is concentrated in the hands of fewer and fewer people. And this American dream that we have all, aspired to is slipping from the grasp of the American people, no matter how hard they work.
What about his point? You know, he said, I think he was admitting that Western European social democracies work, but he's saying that you can't apply those kind of measures to the U.S. because we're so diverse, because we have a diverse population. You can't say that we're going to be turning into a progressive social democratic state like Sweden.
Yeah, well, you know, England has a large and growing minority population. France does as well. I never quite understand that argument about, like, is the argument that only white people could do this? Because if that's the argument, I reject it. The diversity of our country is a strength of ours. You know, as we talked about at the beginning of this conversation, the progressive movement is a movement that spans, race, it spans gender, it spans sexual orientation, expands religion. And this is a movement to lift people in all communities up. And if, like I said, if the argument is that somehow the presence of people who are not white is somehow keeping us from being able to do what the Europeans have done with some success, then I reject that argument.
I think all you have to do is walk. You went to Boston University. I think all you have to do is to walk on the campus of a major university like Berkeley or BU or Harvard and look at the diversity on campus these days, much more diverse than it was in the 50s. And you realize these are the scientists, these are the doctors, these are the entrepreneurs of the future. And you look at you go to the University of Washington, Seattle. I mean, huge diversity on campus compared to what it was 60 years ago.
Well, absolutely. And that's a great strength of America. I mean, we cannot afford to have a structure in place that keeps bright people, regardless of what zip code they come from being able to get the maximum education so that they can contribute in a maximum way to the economy and the success of the country. Like that's just irrational in terms of a nation. But the truth of the matter is that when young people look at the price tag for going to college, they either can't afford it at all, or they understand that they're going to come out with so much debt. And, you know, there's some evidence that the people who come out of college with huge amounts of debt are delaying other things in their life, like getting married or buying a house or buying a car. all of which, you know, have economic impacts on the country. So you're creating, you know, in the aggregate, there may be more wealth, as I said, but, you know, among the vast majority of people, they're poor. When you come out of college and you get a better job than you would have gotten if you hadn't gone to college, but you have $150,000 or $200,000 in debt, you are poorer than when you went to college. You may have greater income potential, and maybe over time you will, you know, pay back that cost. But when the day you graduate from college, you're poorer than the day you went in.
Our guest is Jeff Weaver. He ran Bernie Sanders' presidential campaign in 2016. He's written a new book, How Bernie Won, Inside the Revolution That's Taking Back Our Country and Where We Go From Here. And he'll be speaking in St. Pete in Sarasota next Thursday and Friday. James Lyles is our phone producer today. We've got an open line, 813-239-9663. Let's go to Chip in Tampa for our next question. Chip, what's your question?
Yeah, well, first, I'm really enjoying Jeff's common sense observations. He just makes a lot of sense. And so I would like to make an observation about Tuesday night, and then if you want to dispute it or just ignore it, whatever. But I believe this is going to turn out to be a watershed moment, Andrew Gillum winning, and not just for the progressive movement, but for the country as a whole, where voters now realize that the mainstream media and all their pundits' notion that you have to have money and name recognition to be a viable candidate and win is debunked. And this idea that running centrist and being pragmatic no longer applies. What people care about is policies. And that's what you need, not to be centrist or pragmatic, but to propose policies, specific platform that benefits the majority of people. And I think this is a big, I don't know, wake-up call or encouraging result that the rest of the country, I think, is going to all of a sudden say, hey, you know what? I'm going to start voting for who I actually like and
all right.
Not who I think is most likely to win or the lesser of two evils.
All right, Chip.
Because I have no doubt that this isn't even going to be close in November. I'm expecting a landslide. So.
All right, Chip, thanks. Thanks for your comments. Jeff?
Well, from your lips to God's ears, Chip, you know, I mean, I agree with you that we have got to, for the Democratic Party to be successful, we have got to rediscover our modern roots. We have got to speak clearly and unabashedly about the needs of people. We need to let people know whose side we are on. And, you know, there's been too much concern about trying to court corporate interests or the donor class, Democratic donor class. You know, they are an anchor on the party, and we have got to move forward and be clear about who we represent. And, you know, people like Andrew Gillum are doing that, obviously to great success.
Bernie Sanders ran his campaign with an average donation of $27 during 2016.
Yeah, look, you know, one of the great unknowns in our campaign at the beginning was how much money we would be able to raise. And, you know, we originally budgeted for $30 million with a $50 million fantasy number that we could somehow reach that over the course of the campaign. And at the end of the day, with an average contribution of $27, we raised $230 million, which allowed Bernie to run the type of modern campaign that other candidates run with a progressive message. And, you know, too often you have these grossly underfunded progressive candidates who get beat in primaries by well-funded you know, corporatist Democrat or centrist Democrat opponents. And then people say, well, look, the progressives are being rejected. But when you you don't have to have as much money as they do, but if you have the necessary minimum, and certainly that was Andrew Gillum's situation, he was grossly outspent, but he did have, you know, substantial resources, enough obviously to get his message out. When that happens, then you see that progressives are very successful. And you know, I cannot thank enough the grassroots of this country who reached out with such generosity, often repeatedly, $27 at a time, to support Bernie's campaign and to support candidates like Andrew Gillum and others around the country who are running similar races. So this is a real testament to American democracy that the grassroots of the country are speaking up $27 at a time. And, you know, we can beat the super PACs and the million-dollar contributions and all the craziness that goes on if folks are willing to pitch in their $27. So you know, I would obviously encourage folks to Florida to go to Andrew Gillum's site and to send him $27 today.
Let's go to Mike, who's listening in North Carolina. Mike, what's your question for Jeff Weaver?
Hi, Rob and Jeff. Thank you. You could do another whole hour, Rob, with this man. I do want to say as an aside, though, I know you were joking, but it's not a joking about the old white guy thing, especially in light of people like Sarah Jeong bragging about how much pleasure she gets out of hurting old white guys. And I don't claim to be put upon or prejudiced against, but we're such an easy target. And who helped Roy Moore the most? It was middle-aged religious women in Alabama. It wasn't white guys. So keep in mind that at least 50% of white guys are like me and you, Rob.
All right. Well, I apologized, and I'll apologize again. Sorry, Mike.
Well, as an old white guy myself, I don't think of myself as old, but getting there, old white guy. Look, you know, this has to be a coalition of people.
Nothing divisive. But I have a real question for you, Jeff. As a retired guy who worked nonprofit most of my life, I don't have a big fat amount of money to live on, and I think my Medicare is among the best health insurance I've ever had. What scares the hell out of me is that the true agenda of the think tanks and the powers behind Trump are the eventual elimination of what they deem entitlements, which I worked my whole life for. Where do you see this coming first? Because I know Trump is going to go there. What should we look out for? And do you know of a great organization that is protecting the rights of older people, especially hands-off Medicare?
Well, there's a committee to preserve Social Security and Medicare, which is a great group. ARA, the Association of Retired Americans, is another great group. You know, there are groups out there who are fighting to preserve Social Security and Medicare. Obviously, the broader progressive community, you know, Our Revolution, which is an organization that sprang out of by folks out of our campaign. But there are other groups as well. There's certainly progressive Democratic groups all over the place. Look, you know, your point is well taken. You know, that the modern Republican Party has really spent much of the last few decades trying to dismantle the success of the New Deal. And part of that is Social Security. And to part to undo the success of the Great Society, which is Medicare, in the economic frame. And they've also been trying to attack the Civil Rights Act, which was another success of the Great Society programs of LBJ. So, you know, they are trying to chip away at the social safety net, which was developed over the course of the, you know, since the New Deal. And we've got to be steadfast, not only in protecting it, but also in expanding it and making sure that to the extent there are problems with it, that we address those. You know, for instance, you know, Medicare often doesn't cover eyeglasses and dental care and things like that. And we've got to, you know, so we've got to expand the benefits under Medicare, hopefully as part of a Medicare for All program that would provide comprehensive benefits on a universal basis.
All right, Mike, thanks a lot. Thanks for your question. All right. Jeff, we're just down to our last 30 seconds. What else would you like to tell us before we close out the show?
Well, I want to thank you for having me, obviously, and I look forward to coming down to Florida and meeting with folks down there. But I do want to say, for folks who are dispirited in this time of Trump, I do want you to know that there is a light at the end of the tunnel. You can see it in people like Andrew Gillum. You know, we are taking back this country. We're having success all over the country. The Democratic Party is being transformed, and the nation is being transformed. And we can take this country back and make it a government and economy that works for all of us. I ask people not to lose faith, but to you know, lean in a little harder. And we'll get through this next couple of years with Trump, and he'll be gone in 2020, and we can get back to the work of moving this country forward.
All right. Well, Jeff Weaver, author of How Bernie Won, Inside the Revolution That's Taking Back Our Country and Where We Go From Here. Jeff, thanks for coming on WMNF. We hope to get you back.
I'd love to anytime.
All right. Thanks, Jeff.
You will.
Bye-bye. Jeff is going to be speaking three times in the next week here in the Tampa Bay area. I'll give you that information right now. He'll be at the Suncoast Tiger Bay next Thursday at 11:30 in the morning. And that's a lunchtime speech. You can go to tigerbay.org to register for that luncheon. They tell me the deadline to register is this coming Monday. Also, he'll be speaking that night at 7 o'clock on the Eckerd College campus in South St. Petersburg. And then next Friday, September 7th at 7 p.m., he'll be speaking at Fogartyville, which is at 525 Kumquat Court in Sarasota. And if you want to comment about today's show, please call us up, 813-238-8001. Record your comment on extension 115. We'll play your comments back tomorrow morning at 11 o'clock. Be sure to be here. This is 88.5 FM, WMNF, Tampa, St. Petersburg. Some of the organizers that helped Andrew Gillum win on Tuesday are going to be the guests in the next hour on Shelley Reback's Midpoint program, so stick around for that. This is 88.5 FM, WMNF, Tampa, St. Petersburg. Here's the latest news from NPR.